Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We started off the show a couple hours ago talking about all the drama surrounding Dak Prescott and what exactly is going on with Dallas, but that's just a small part of the drama that is currently taking place in the NFL. We've got Carson Wentz uncertainty. We've got Russell Wilson going on Dan Patrick yesterday and basically making it clear that he's not super happy about how things are going in Seattle. We've got Deshaun Watson, clearly all the drama surrounding what might happen in Houston. We already have had the move from Matthew Stafford to the Rams and Jared Goff to the Lions. And I think what this is all emblematic of is everybody trying to chase Tom Brady. And I don't mean literally chase Tom Brady, although everybody is looking up at Brady's 10 Super Bowls. But the NFL's a copycat league. And right now, I would love to know if you could go back in time and you could say, what is Tom Brady's biggest legacy going to be? I think Tom Brady's biggest legacy, I really believe this, is going to be quarterback empowerment. What do I mean by that? Brady played the good soldier for a long time in New England. Even though he, I think, chafed at the leadership of Bill Belichick, he was willing to put his head down, to keep working, to keep driving, to stay in New England. And then we don't know exactly what happened. I would love to know from Tom Brady exactly what happened. But finally, that relationship between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick fundamentally fractured. And Brady, who I think had always been willing to stay in New England, finally decided, I've had enough. And I think you got to give credit to Robert Kraft, because we talked about ownership structure and power and how decisions are made. I think Robert Kraft found a way to try to work with Bill Belichick and with Tom Brady, with both of those guys having pretty massive egos and trying to keep them both happy. And I think he did for a long time. And then ultimately, I think Brady just had enough. And I think Bill Belichick wasn't willing to bow down at the altar of Tom Brady anymore. I think Belichick thought Brady was washed up. I really do. Because the lesson from New England, to the extent there is one, is don't get so attached to your players that you end up overpaying them after their value is already gone. Ultimately, Belichick's genius is not necessarily football, although there's some there. It's knowing the value of a football player. Because how many times have you seen New England wildly overpay for a player? It almost never happens. And how many times have you seen a player leave New England and have incredible success without being a Patriot? Very rarely. Brady, I think, is already the most successful New England Patriot departure almost there's ever been. Because in his final year in New England, Brady threw 24 touchdown passes. In his first year with Tampa Bay, he threw 50. He over doubled his touchdown performance, going from 42 years old to 43 years old in a brand new system. How does that happen? It's because things were broken in New England. And everybody is looking up at that 10 Super Bowls that Tom Brady has been to and the 7 that he's won. But I think the legacy of Tom Brady's empowerment era is actually going to be felt more with his move to Tampa Bay than it was with his tenure with Bill Belichick. Because I think there are a lot of guys looking around, Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff. I think they're all looking around. And deep in the back of their mind, they're saying, I'm the reason why this team wins or loses. And if they don't have me, they are screwed. And I think Russell Wilson thinks that in Seattle. I think that Deshaun Watson thinks that in Houston. A little bit more difficult for him because they went 4-12 with him. I think Carson Wentz thinks that. I think Dak Prescott thinks that down in Dallas. And I think it's no coincidence that the quarterback empowerment era is roaring right after Tom Brady left New England and proved that the quarterback is ascendant by winning a Super Bowl in his first year with Tampa Bay. This just doesn't happen, guys. It really, truly doesn't happen. Okay? I want you to think about that in a larger context. Almost no one wins the Super Bowl with a team that lets them leave unless there's a major injury issue and the team thinks they have nothing left. Drew Brees goes to New Orleans. The Chargers are moving on to Phillip Rivers, but also with that injury to Drew Brees, Chargers aren't sure if he's ever going to play again. Peyton Manning goes from Indy to Denver. Why did they let him leave? Because they believed that his career might be over, and they were moving on to Andrew Luck. Tampa Bay. Brady got let go in many ways by New England, but also he now has proven, I think, to a lot of these veteran quarterbacks that they're the reason why their team wins and that they don't have to worry about being able to have a second act. It's really kind of fascinating to think about. The story of Brady may not have that many chapters left because he's already 43 years old. But if you asked me right now, what is the most impactful thing that Brady has done with this 10th Super Bowl appearance and this 7th Super Bowl win, I think that it has let loose a torrent of interest among the quarterbacks about how empowered they are. Now, I don't think that there are a lot of guys in the NFL who have the ability to be empowered. I think there's a caste system, and quarterbacks as the effective CEO of the team are on a lot higher level than your average player is at other positions where guys recognize that they're disposable, where they're fungible. But that's not the case at the quarterback position. There's about 10 guys that can truly make a difference, 15 on the outside. And usually if a team gets one of those guys, they want them for the whole length of their tenure. But what you're starting to see, and I'm still not sure whether or not it's good for the NFL or not, but what I think you're starting to see is you're starting to see some of these quarterbacks recognize their value, and they're not content to let all the decisions be made by a GM, by a coach, or by an owner. And if they see bad decisions being made, they decide that they want to move on. And I think Brady's success, I think Deshaun Watson's looking around like, man, there's a lot of teams I could go to that are more talented than the Texans. If I went there, we'd win a championship. I think Russell Wilson's looking around and saying, wait a minute, this team hasn't been able to build around me. There's a lot of teams that have built a lot better offensive systems. If I went there, I'd win immediately. I think Carson Wentz is thinking that. I think Dak Prescott is. We know Matthew Stafford is, because he finally got fed up with sitting around in Detroit and watching all the poor decisions they made for 12 years, and he said, let me out. And I think this is going to be a brand new quarterback empowerment era, the likes of which we've never seen before. Now, there's a flip side to it too. Because if the players are not going to be loyal to the teams, I think there's going to be a lot less loyalty to the quarterbacks than there has been historically. And you're already starting to see this. Josh Rosen's on his fourth team in 4 years, even though he was a top 10 pick. Dwayne Haskins got kicked to the curb before he even finished his second year, even though he was a first-round pick. The years of an organization drafting a quarterback in the first round and being committed to him for years and years to come, to me, are over. The commitment level of organizations to their quarterback and quarterbacks to their organizations is disappearing, and it's disappearing in a hurry. And that can be good if you're a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, because suddenly you got a guy like Tom Brady on the market. And it can be good if you're a Chicago Bear fan or an Indianapolis Colts fan or a New England Patriot fan or a Miami Dolphin or a Denver Bronco fan or a San Francisco 49er fan, because instead of knowing that the only way you could really ever get a good quarterback was if you drafted one and then you developed him into being a good quarterback, now the quarterback free agent market is starting to open up. The challenge, however, is now think about like the Houston Texans. It used to be you just waited to see whether or not a quarterback was great, and then if you were fortunate enough to get one, you had him forever. That's kind of what the Kansas City Chiefs think right now with Patrick Mahomes. Oh, we finally got a great quarterback. We signed him to this $500 million deal. We've got him forever. But now it's not just about signing him to a long-term contract, because Deshaun Watson just signed one. It's now also about that quarterback having to be happy in his job. And that is an entirely different dynamic, because there are a lot of NBA players out there that make a lot of money that aren't happy. Adam Silver has talked about that. I think ultimately the reason why NBA players are moving around as much as they are is because they're unhappy with their life stock, even though they're making millions of dollars playing basketball. I think there's a whole larger psychological story we could investigate surrounding social media and how it's made your average pro athlete a lot less happy than they were before. I think that's because they spend too much time paying attention to what strangers say to them. Instead of looking around and realizing how great their lives are, they're looking at what people are saying on the comments to their Instagram posts and their tweets, and there's a lot of anger out there, and that anger feeds on itself, and it means that they're unhappy, because if they're not winning, they're getting blamed directly by fans on their phones all day, every day, all day long. And ultimately, I think that leads to great dissatisfaction no matter how much these athletes are making. Fascinating to think about. We'll dissect this maybe a little bit more. But up next, Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports. He is waking up and he will be hanging out with us. Can't wait to see how things go with him for the Bachelor Report, among other things.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
At the old P, you can find him there. Petros Papadakis, how is your morning going?
Well, it's not been on long, but I was able to fix the coffee machine.
Oh, that's a good start to the day.
Yeah, and I didn't hit it. Usually, you know, when something starts breaking, I go with the Zoolander trying to pull information out of the computer technique, which is, you know, kind of hit the computer and
yeah,
shake
right.
it, you know. But I didn't. I was patient. I looked, you know. Now that I'm getting more patient at 43, I'm starting to become just sort of like everybody else.
Well, except Brady, who at 43 is becoming less and less like a 43-year-old.
Yeah, what a dork he was in college, too. And he's still a pretty huge dork, but he's great. There's no denying it. And he's got a great sense of humor, and he handles himself really well in a team environment. And we'll be talking about him like we talk about Joe Montana, if not more so.
Do you like when you look at him as another 43-year-old guy, what do you think he's doing that is it just genetic? Do you think that he's on some
genetics, no, because genetically, like, look, I knew Tom Brady before Tom Brady was
right.
any guy that, I mean, I knew him as a quarterback at Michigan who was best friends with our first baseman at USC, because they played baseball together at Sarah High School in Northern California, where he's from. Other guys that went to school there, Barry Bonds.
Yep.
Lynn Swan. So it's a famous private Catholic high school up in Northern California. Not the most famous. That would be De La Salle with the long football streaks and all that. But he was a guy who would come down to USC and try to hang out with his friend Bill Peavy, and he was a dork. And then I remember a friend of mine who was an NFL trainer, a guy who got people ready for the combine, and quite a lucrative one. And at the time that he was training guys, everybody, and I was down there too in New Orleans with like Quincy Carter and Ricky Williams and Michael Vick was in and out, and Steve DeBerg was helping out the quarterbacks, the old Chiefs quarterback. And we used to watch the videotape of Brady at the combine with his chest and his underwear over and over again, just because it was so funny. And the contrast between him and the guy after him, who was this big, kind of juiced up looking fullback named Dan Kendra from
Florida. I remember him. Yeah.
And Kendra came after Brady and like flexed his pecs and flexed his back and looked all swole. And Brady looked like an old man in the shower at a country club. I mean, he really did. And we all laughed about it and had fun. And 3 years later, he's dating Tara Reid or something, and he's winning the Super Bowl. So, you know, it is a phenomenon to watch him do what he does. But he definitely has a Spartan-like, you know, Olympic athlete type of discipline regimen, it seems. I know guys that played with him and in the pros. And he's a leader, but he's kind of a goofy, dorky guy that just handles himself better than anybody in that position has ever in the history of the sport. But I guess to answer your question, my perspective is that of a guy in college, like, oh my God, look at this goofy guy from Michigan that we have to entertain tonight.
How many years can you play? I mean, that is, I know the rules have been changed for the quarterback position, and that helps in a big way, and that corresponded with his career and everything else. But when you look at him at 43, I mean, what if you were setting the over-under for how many more years he can play at a high level, it certainly doesn't seem like he's close to the end based on how well he played this year.
You know, it's interesting because you go back and you look at the annals of professional football, you know, even before it was popular, and you have guys like Jim Thorpe, you know, 50 years old, half drunk out there, kicking the ball 90 yards, you know, with a bunch of guys who work in a quarry, and nobody cared how old they were. And then as the middle of kind of football came through, there we would get some guys that played a really long time, like Billy Kilmer or Johnny Unitas, same kind of position, quarterback, at a different time where we didn't protect people. And then, you know, you kind of you hit this kind of, I don't know, maybe it's a bell curve or something. And now Brady is sort of defying all of that. And this is not the first time we've seen an older quarterback take over a team and distribute the ball in a way that is really advantageous. It sees the defense. Kurt Warner did it, remember?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Kurt Warner couldn't move at all, and he could just see it, and he was dropping back. He'd get rid of it. You know, Philip Rivers had a really good year doing that in Indianapolis his last year ever. So these guys can play longer and longer. They're more protected. And, I mean, you saw it with poor Pat Mahomes. He's never been that bad in a football game at the pro level. I've seen him in plenty of college games play like that. And, we've never seen it at the NFL level, and he was still running around like a fart in a whirlwind trying to elongate plays. And Brady, it's just play action, play calling, getting rid of the ball. And when they do drop back seven steps and get it downfield a little bit more, it's a very calculated thing. And it just shows you in a football game, speaking of the Super Bowl, you know, and we see it out here with Sean McVay a whole bunch, because he's a really good play caller and he's a renowned play caller, and it doesn't matter who your quarterback is, I guess. And like, just like Andy Reid, every once in a while something can kind of get away from you and you, the score of the game, and you end up looking at the box score and you ended up throwing it way more times than you wanted. The quarterback got hit way more times than you wanted, and you didn't really establish anything. And it can really happen to the best of them. And it happened to Pat Mahomes, even though he's a guy that, you know, is notoriously really smart and gets around with the football. But the old man still just knows how to get rid of it quicker and sees it a little bit better.
We're talking to Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports at the Old P, the Petros and Money Show. Now that the NFL is done, and we're going to get to the Bachelor Report here in a moment, but you played high school football in California. You are connected with high school football because of the show you've done, I think, on the NBC affiliate out there for so long. How frustrating is it to you that all of these other states, many of them, I don't know what the total number, but the vast majority, finished high school football. We've now finished college football. We've now finished the NFL. There isn't a single case of COVID being spread across the line of scrimmage, that is, from one team to another. And yet all these kids, I think I saw one of them tweeting you about the fact that he wasn't able to play. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's any plan right now to allow these kids to be able to play in the spring either, as we're moving into the middle of February now. How frustrating is it for not just the state of California, but for other states out there, but I know you know California well, for California not to have found a way to allow high school kids, not just to play football, but all sports?
Yeah, and I see a lot of chirping about it in Oregon and Washington over the year, too. It's been terrible for those kids.
Yeah.
And, the worst part is when somebody tweets something out like that kid did, and, he's an 18, 17-year-old kid who wants to play football. They've trained him to play football. His identity is a football player, and you're unable to play. And I think everybody understands that at a certain point, but it's the same as college in a lot of ways, with a lot of different nuances and obstacles. But the simple part of it is, like you said, somebody else did it, and you watch somebody else do it, just like being in the Pac-12 or the
Big
Ten.
And they did it safely, which is now we know all the data, like all this argument of, oh, you can't do it safely, it's impossible. That's now thrown on the scrap heap of oblivion. You could have done it.
Well, yeah, you could have, because somebody else did it. They proved that it could be done. I mean, without all those arguments. But every time one of these kids tweets something out, or a coach goes and tries to advocate for the kids and points out what's been done in Texas or Ohio or places anywhere, somebody texts you or tweets you, 450,000 people are dead. This cudgel of an argument that's just supposed to end everything, and the kids are supposed to shut up and go home. And, I mean, maybe that's right, too. I don't know. But if somebody else is playing high school football and you're not, it's a horrible frustration for all of the people involved. And not just high school football, athletics in general in this place. And it's almost like we've just thrown away a lot of these kids' identity without really considering it. At least that's how I feel watching people do it around the country. And there's going to be some real long-term problems about it. And, again, we're not talking about the guys that are going to go on and play on Saturdays that you and I talk about. We're not even talking about the guys that probably needed this year to develop and continue their career. Because those guys can go to a prep school or a JC or, there's always a way. But we're talking about the people that just didn't get to play their senior year of high school football, which is a huge deal in a young person's life, or any sport, but we're talking about football specifically. That's the guys that aren't going to get recruited, the guys who were going to walk off the field the last time in December, November of 2020, those are the people that my heart really breaks for, because it's not really something you can recreate. And it really isn't. Much even more so than basketball and stuff like that, because, how are you going to get a bunch of equipment and refs and coaches and 2 weeks of camp? I mean, football is a big ordeal and a giant endeavor. So I feel badly for the young people that just missed out this year while having to watch others do it in other places in our country, a lot of other places, the majority of other places in our country.
There's no doubt. Petros Papadakis. All right, transitioning from that heartfelt pay on to lost footballdom and sports in general, it's bachelor time. And I believe you have brought some clips for everyone out there. It's almost Valentine's Day. We are about to give you what you can talk to with the new girl that you're dating, maybe your wife. I sit and watch this with my wife, The Bachelor. It's a date night, Monday night. And what do we learn, P?
Well, it sucks that Victoria's gone, because she definitely was the, to use a football term, the straw that stirred the drink in the house. But we still have some drama, and look, it's such a contrived deal when they add people and act shocked by it. And that's really the backdrop of this whole episode, is that they added this girl.
Knockout blonde.
Heather, yeah, who was from Colton's season, the tight end. And they fake security footage. And
yeah.
Harrison comes down with his little mosquito hands and goes, you know, I've never seen anything like this. You know, I'm never surprised, but my goodness. It's like, you guys are just, I mean, it's so contrived. And then, of course, all the women act insane and crazed over the addition. And it's just because they are in quarantine and they need something to spice up the show. But we had plenty of anger. Here is Jessena and the big curly blonde hair girl, MJ, fighting it out right at the beginning of the episode before during a two-on-one date, right before MJ, one of the last of the mean girls, is eliminated. Here you go, Danny.
I'm going to keep being a bad bitch. This is not going to shake me at all. This is done. Jessena, we talked it out like adults at the cocktail party, and I asked you to stop talking about me. I thought we talked it out like adults and squashed it.
MJ, I brought up your name because you started that.
You need to do less at this point.
Yeah, based off of this, I wonder what MJ Matt got to see tonight.
I don't have anything to say. This is who I am.
You know what, Meredith?
Oh, that's cute.
You preach all the time about weak bitch energy.
You are so...
Well, weak bitches lie.
You know what a weak bitch does is they tear down other people to make themselves look better, and that's what you did. You tried to knock me out by... attacking my character.
Out, MJ.
You know what? You are literally.
You yourself
this
out,
is
MJ.
So petty. You need to literally check yourself right now.
Literally.
Check yourself. I check myself.
That is
every
petty.
Day.
You continue to be petty. Just saying, I'm done. Just stop.
You are done. You are done, MJ.
Cute.
You are done.
Okay.
I love. That, I don't know how you respond to you need to check yourself, and she says, I check myself every day.
You need to literally check yourself.
Literally check yourself. Yeah.
So I guess you go in the bathroom and, you know, give yourself a look. I don't.
Literally is the most overused word on The Bachelor, even more than like, I think. That was a battle for all time.
It really is. It really is Usain Bolt versus Carl Lewis.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I thought it was Burr versus Hamilton. I mean, it was a duel for the ages. All right, what else we got?
Frost Nixon.
Frost Nixon. That's a great one too.
Let's move on to another fight. Katie is the front runner for the next Bachelorette.
Yes,
because she was sent home on Monday night, but she's the girl that came in waving around the vibrator.
Yes.
But then stole America's heart by being a whistleblower against the Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And here she is versus the last of the Mean Girls, Serena, who's a quite attractive flight attendant. But her eyes are so far apart, she needs to wear two pairs of sunglasses. Katie versus Serena on being a whistleblower.
The fact that you're sitting here still trying to attack me is pathetic. Pathetic. If you have a problem with last night, take it up with Matt.
There are 10 girls here. Their biggest picture here is to be with Matt.
I am who I am. I've never been fake, and Matt likes me for everything that I am. So don't speak on his behalf anymore. You keep taking up so much of my energy, and it's a
taking
waste.
Taking up your energy?
Yes.
Your little antics of all the drama that you've been in and been inserting yourself in every conversation and other people's business that's not even your own, you're lighting all these little fires everywhere. You are the freaking arsonist.
Arson!
How is telling Matt about being a bully and toxicity and mean girls? That doesn't help your relationship at all.
I didn't drop
and
any
that's
names
I'm
to Matt.
Every,
I did not
it
drop...
It doesn't matter.
It does, because
it
I let the girls tell what they wanted to tell. If everyone thought that...
How does that help your relationship with Matt?
Does it doesn't matter.
Do you hear that?
They're screaming?
We're going at her. Shut the up, that's them.
Because I'm not going to sit here and let happen in this house. I'm not going to sit here and let mean girls be mean girls in this house. So guess what? I told them, yeah, there's some going on in this house. Not my story to tell, so the girls, whoever, want to tell their story.
That's exactly my same
they're
thing.
Going to tell their story. So guess what? I didn't drop MJ's name. Guess what? I didn't drop Anna's name. I let the girls speak for themselves. So don't be mad at me that girls' names were brought up. There is some high school
other things besides your relationship with Matt.
As I said
I'm
last
not
night,
the only one.
Thank you for your feedback.
Oh, Dub, you want to jump in with your analysis there?
You know, as I'm watching this episode last, I watch on Tuesday nights. Katie is, to me, is the little finger of this season of The Bachelor because... I mean, everywhere she goes, she causes chaos, and she's kind of just controlling every girl in this season like a little pawn. So that was my little analogy there.
That's not a bad analogy at all. Petros, what do you think?
She's gone.
Yeah.
You know,
well, much like Littlefinger, you know, spoiler alert, you never know what's going to happen. One day you get your throat slit.
What happens to Littlefinger? Did he get thrown out of the hole in that castle?
No, it wasn't the hole. I think he gets his throat slit, like, unexpectedly, doesn't he? Like, right there in the, I have to go back and watch, but somebody else is a Game of Thrones. Doesn't it come down to him versus Sansa, and she ends up winning, like, the debate over what happened with Littlefinger?
I don't know.
Yeah. That's right. He gets his throat
she
slit.
Kills him. The redhead
yeah, he gets his
kills
throat
him.
Slit. Yeah.
The redhead kills him. Well, much like Game of Thrones, this episode ends stupidly as well. We have the knockout blonde, as Clay described.
She is an absolute knockout. She might be crazy, but she's gorgeous.
She shows up simply because her friend Hannah told her that Matt would be perfect for her. So I guess, you know, they just let you into the resort there after quarantine. And here is her walking in, freaking out, talking to Matt, everybody's reaction. I mean, it's the apocalypse in Pennsylvania here.
Hi. Do you think I could talk to you for a sec?
She just laughs maniacally.
Heather? Piper, I am so sorry. I just need a couple minutes. I'll be right back.
I'll see you.
Hi! It's nice to meet you.
Oh my god.
What the heck?
What the f***? Who is that?
She's from Colton season.
Did she interrupt you?
Yes, I was like...
What did she say?
I've been waiting all week to have a conversation with this guy who I just told that I'm falling in love with him, so this would be like a really good time to like plan my life with this dude, and this random ass girl walks in. I didn't say anything. I was like Matt just
did
started...
Did he know her? Like, did he recognize her?
Yes, he just started like cracking up, and I was like...
Wait, what? He started laughing? And, like...
and then he was like, oh my god, oh my god. And
okay,
I was
yeah,
like,
I feel like I'm in a dream right now.
I am literally shaking my heart. I feel like I'm in a dream. Oh my gosh.
Wait, what just happened?
What happened?
Who is she? Like, who is she?
She's from Colton season. She's friends, I think, with Hannah Brown.
So, you probably wonder why I'm here. So I kind of want to tell you the whole story.
I'm listening.
Oh my gosh. I'm literally shaking.
She just like strutted in. She smiled at us and then she just took a hard left.
Yeah, what the f-? I don't really know this girl and I kind of already don't like her.
I'm stressed out and pissed off.
She's had her time. Like, go home, please.
At the end of the day, it is Matt's choice, and if Matt decides he wants to keep her, then I will have a reason to be upset and hate her even more.
What, she's gonna come in and, like, marry him? No, like...
You're gonna let a new girl come in, or if you're gonna give a new girl a rose over some of us that have been here for this long, then you better marry that girl, because the rest of us, we're gonna be pissed.
If she gets a rose tonight, I'll be rageful.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm going to get so mad.
I'm going to be rageful,
I've
too.
I've been manipulated by production.
Petros Papadakis, it is always spectacular. Thank you for the Bachelor Report. For everybody out there, Valentine's is Saturday and Sunday coming up this weekend. Now you have something to talk about with a girl out there who's probably watching, right? This is it.
Well, good luck.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Couple things that I want to hit here. One, you may have noticed Colin Cowherd has not been on his radio show so far this week. He had a blood clot that they found in his right lung. Had to be hospitalized for that. And this is not me breaking news. He talked about this, put out a video late last night. I want him to get well. I want you guys also to know that. We're part of a big family at Fox Sports Radio. He's a great dude. And I wanted you guys to know why you might not have been hearing him. And I want you to know that that we, part of the Outkick family, are all rooting for him to get well also and be back as soon as possible. Also, a couple of different stories that are out there that you'll probably unpack a little bit. That Mark Cuban story, I'm still kind of more interested in enjoying the sort of the lasting glory of the college, the NFL season, then dive into the NBA contention all over again with the national anthem not playing in Dallas, and the fact that he's been doing it all season makes it not to me as big of a story because people didn't notice. But I do think that's worthy of examination. I've written about that in my book, Why Do We Play the Anthem Before We Start Sporting Events Here in the United States, and the history and legacy of that. I think we'll probably dive into that some tomorrow as that story continues to unpack itself. Also, we talked a lot about quarterback drama, and I just saw coming across the internet sphere here, there are a lot of mock drafts coming out, and Todd McShay does one of the best mock drafts out there, and he has four quarterbacks going as the first four picks in his 2021 mock draft, and he has five quarterbacks going inside of the top 12. We're talking a lot about the quarterback position in the NFL in general, but a lot of these different teams that could find themselves potentially trying to get a free agent quarterback, whether it's the Bears, whether it's the Panthers, whether it maybe was the Jets or the Falcons. There's a lot of different teams out there, the Dolphins, that could be in the mix before all is said and done for a quarterback, maybe even the Dallas Cowboys. I think we can start to now work in all of these different draft-eligible quarterbacks. And I've been saying for a while, I think there are five or six quarterbacks that will go in the first round, but to have five going in the first 12 picks is, I think, an emblematic storyline about how many people are unhappy right now with their quarterbacks in general. So all of that coming on the Thursday edition of the program. I encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single moment of that podcast. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Outkick. My thanks to Petros Papadakis, to Sean Merriman, and to one of the newest Outkick employees, Jonathan Hutton, for all of their work as guests in this show. And as always, I love The Bachelor Report. Probably the most polarizing thing that we do on the show. Many of you out there are like, God, Petros is so good at this. Others of you are like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Why would you ever do this to me? Why would you start off my morning? Well, there you go. You can't please everybody. This is Outkick. Go sign up for the Outkick VIP, outkick.com/VIP. It's the best thing you can do if you love everything about Outkick. One more time, get well, Colin Cowherd. We look forward to you being back on the show. Download the podcast, Clay Travis or Outkick. This has been the Wednesday edition of the program. Same bat time, same bat channel tomorrow with Outkick.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.